Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Coming up later, a lot of you have been arriving at the household waste recycling sites with your hard plastic, hoping to leave them for recycling, but being disappointed to find that landfill is your only option. Councillor Terry Hone will be explaining why. But first, I've mentioned on this show before that I'm concerned that the pond in my garden, which is normally heaving with tadpoles in spring, is empty of all frogs, frog spawn and tadpoles. And your reaction on Twitter shows that others of you in St Albans have noticed the same thing. So, should we be worried? I spoke to Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust Reserves Manager Rob Hopkins to find out. Rob, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So, do we know how frogs decide when to spawn?
Well, it's amazing. The animal kingdom is amazing, and obviously we know some bits about how they work and some how they don't work. But we've got a pretty good idea with frogs. A lot of it's to do with day length and temperatures. Frogs, I've been fascinated with frogs ever since I've been interested in wildlife, which is about 30 years now, and I've had ponds in our garden for that time as well. And in that time, you get a bit of an idea when frogs are going to emerge. Yeah. Certainly, I've lived in Watford for 25 years, and almost guarantee every last week in February, my wife's birthday is the 22nd of February, so I always remember that, the frogs emerge.
Okay. So you've got a pretty good handle on when the frogs should be there then. And I think I noticed a similar thing with the pond in my garden as well. Now, listeners have noticed, and I've noticed as well, that frog spawn is missing from their ponds this year. So, have you noticed this at all when you've been out and about on reserves?
Certainly have, actually, and also talking to other people with similar interests. But this year, for people that I'm sure we haven't forgotten about the beast from the east, which was about the last couple of days in February and the first week in March. And as I said, frogs tended to emerge. I saw lots. I'm a cyclist. I cycled to work from St Albans to Watford every day. And although it's lovely to know the frogs are emerging, it's also pretty awful because you see so many dead frogs that are squashed on the road on that last week in February, which you probably wouldn't notice if you were driving a car. But on a bike, you see these poor things squashed by the side of the road.
OK, so you saw the frogs emerging, but then they didn't make it to the ponds, or they just got there and didn't do anything?
Well, they might have got there, but a couple of days later, incredibly, the weather changed really, really quickly and became cold. And then we saw very few after that.
Yeah.
And when you normally would have expected lots of spawn in the first week of March, you'd see big patches of spawn. And of course, they either perished on the way because of the cold. A lot of them are squashed on the road, and that's an increasing problem with the sort of urbanisation of Hertfordshire. It's a tough world being a frog, because frogs are quite mobile creatures. They're not just local. They won't just stay near your pond or around your pond. They'll cover quite a large range looking for food.
So obviously they're under a lot of pressure anyway, as you say, with things like being killed on roads. And you think perhaps just this cold snap that went just the timing of the beast from the east just happened at the wrong time and was just an extra stress that the frogs couldn't take?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it's still anecdotal, and it'd be interesting to see whether that's a feeling that's been noted nationwide. Obviously, the east of the country got the worst cold.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was watching Gardeners World, Monty Don, and he had a pond full of frogs, actually, a few weeks ago. So maybe part other parts of the country have done better, but certainly all my friends, you tend to mix with similar-minded people, and a lot of my friends, we've got gardens with ponds, and we haven't noticed exactly the same. Fewer, and some haven't got any frog spawn. I had a couple of clumps on my allotment pond, which I was quite pleased about, but they came a bit late, actually. They were late after the beast from the east,
right.
But then before that second cold period, we had the middle of March.
Yeah, you see, some people, like you say, do have frog spawn in their ponds. So would it be a good idea, if there are frogs in some places and not in other places, perhaps to, if there are any tadpoles left, to move those into your pond, or perhaps to kidnap some frogs to repopulate your pond?
Well, it's tempting, and I would be lying if I said I hadn't done it myself. But from a wildlife trust and general nature conservation professional, I would say no, because unfortunately it's very, very easy to spread diseases around in ponds. And also, there's lots of things in ponds you don't necessarily necessarily want to introduce into other ponds. For instance, there's some very invasive weeds that you could transfer as well. But frogs and all other amphibians worldwide are affected by lots of diseases.
Okay.
And
so we should, if the frogs are going to migrate to areas, we should just let them do it by themselves. We shouldn't give them a hand because we might be taking infections.
I think that's right. It is very, you know, we all tend to want to help wildlife where we can. But
yeah.
I've done it myself. But if you have a healthy pond and you get some spawn or some plant material with some spawn on from another pond, you may well just be destroying your own pond.
Okay, which would be tragic, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you've mentioned disease, you've mentioned the pressure from cars. How, generally speaking, are amphibians like frogs doing in Hertfordshire?
They're doing not as well as what I'd like. I've noticed over 25 years there has been a decline. It's funny, actually, but, you know, and once again, it's a little bit anecdotal, but it's reflected by quite a few people I've spoken to. It's newts seem to be okay. There seem to be more newts in ponds, and frogs. You know, I can remember 20 years ago, we where we live, we have open gardens where in Watford, and you go to other people's gardens, you see that absolutely lots of frogs. Now those ponds might have one or two frogs.
Yeah,
and
just. Again, anecdotal, just my own observation, I'd say the same. I don't remember as a child ever seeing a newt, but there did seem to be frog spawn everywhere at a particular time of year, whereas now, not so much,
no.
Isn't there? So, I suppose that begs the question, is there anything we can do about that? I mean, is there anything we can do in our gardens, for example?
Well, certainly ponds are good, and obviously, we're not trying to detract from the newts. Newts are very important as well, and it's lovely to have some life. Ponds, and unfortunately, newts and frogs don't tend to share the same ponds very well. You tend to get ponds that have lots of newts don't tend to have many frogs, and the other way around, because they tend to eat the spawn of the other species. So what you can do, and I think, you know, the Wildlife Trust would stress, and we've been stressing for many years, is more ponds.
Okay, so perhaps you could create a pond at any time, couldn't you? It doesn't have to be big, presumably, but that bigger is presumably better.
It is. It doesn't have to be huge, and you could, even if it's just a small water feature in a small garden. Obviously,
yeah.
We all live in a much more crowded environment, and bigger gardens are probably a thing of the past now. So you don't have to have huge gardens. We've got a small terraced house with two small ponds, and they're both very productive. So I would stress, if people can find some space, you know, to put a pond in, that would be very beneficial.
And of course, that's not just great for amphibians, is it? That's fabulous for all wildlife.
Absolutely. It just really brings a garden to life. So you've got, you know, at the moment we've got the damselflies just emerging. You'll have obviously birds drinking and bathing from them, so they've got multiple reasons to, you know, and as well as being beautiful to look at. You know, you get lovely flowers, marginal flowers, bog gardens, so, you know, it's a lovely part of a garden that's interesting all times of year.
Yeah, well, that sounds like great advice, Rob. You say great for the amphibians and great for us as well. Rob, thank you very much indeed for joining me. And I was talking there to Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust Reserves Officer Rob Hopkins, and I agree with what he says about ponds. I love the pond in my garden. Just watching all the animals coming there is wonderful. Now, there's been uproar in St Albans recently about the withdrawal of the collection of hard plastic waste at our household waste recycling centres. Spurred on by Blue Planet, we've been arriving with plastic items that we can't put in our curbside collection, only to be told that these items will have to go to landfill. Councillor Terry Hone, the Cabinet Member for Community Protection and Waste Management, joined me earlier on the telephone to explain what's going on. Councillor Hone, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So, can you explain to us why the collection of hard plastics for recycling at our household waste recycling sites has been stopped?
Certainly, yeah. Hard plastics, or rigid plastics as we describe them, rigid plastics include things like garden furniture, toilets, buckets, crates, these sorts of things. I think you can realise they are hard and they are rigid. Yes, certainly we've stopped taking them at our household waste recycling centres. Just recently, we take in about 1,500 tonnes of rigid plastics every year into recycling centres. St Albans actually is about 130 tonnes of that 1,500 tonnes. One of the problems we have is that we've got to get rid of it after we've collected it and after the good residents have put it in the right containers. The company that operates our recycling centres, which is Amy, they and then collect all the rubbish and they pass it on, in this case, the rigid plastics, to a company called Pierce, which is a local company, who then dispose of it in a way appropriate way. And the way in which it was being disposed of in the past was it was being pressurised and sent, of all places, to China. I think we've read in the media that China was no longer taking such items and was putting all sorts of controls in place around taking plastics,
okay,
particularly from Europe. So that meant there was a block. And then what happened was Pearson's have found another outlet for it, which was again, which was the Philippines. So they had containerized five containers of rigid plastics, sent them down to the docks, and when it got to the docks, the dock authority inspected it and said it's contaminated. This rigid plastic, these containers are contaminated. So they called in the environment agency, and the environment agency come in and said, yes, these are contaminated with metal. Now, you can understand why they're contaminated with metal. This is things like children's toys, bicycles and motor cars and these sorts of things. And so there's a certain amount of metal in that plastic. And the environment agency said, oh, there's too much contamination in here, too much metal. It was below 5%, which is what the normal span is allowed.
So normally you would have expected that that metal would have been separated out when it was dealt with.
You've got to crush it first because it's hard plastic. So you crush it, then you take the metal out. And that's what normally happens, when it was going to China. But the environment agency said, no, we want it crushed beforehand and we want the metal taken out beforehand before we ship it out from our ports or allow the port authority to ship it out. So Pearson's took back their five containers back into their storage and said, what are we going to do with them? So they then started looking for another outlet where they could, in fact, pass it in the UK, preferably, without having to spend too much time, energy and money in checking it out and seeing what the contaminations were, which, according to them, was not as serious as the Environment Agency had thought it was. So they're still checking to try if they can find an outlet for that. And until such time they do find an outlet, then we are saying to the residents of Hertfordshire, continue to take that to the recycling centre, but unfortunately it's going to go into residual waste. If you can hold on to it, then please hold on to it until such time as we have that recycling facility for rigid plastics up and running.
Okay.
And we expect that to be weeks rather than months, and Pearson's, the people who take it off are aiming, saying to them, it should be in weeks rather than months before we have found somebody who would take it off our hands in the condition it is.
Okay. Terry, the two places that you mentioned that the plastics could be taken to for recycling, the Philippines and China, we know from the sort of what's happened since Blue Planet that these are two of the worst countries for plastic pollution in the sea. Could you be sure that the plastic was actually being recycled properly there and not just tipped into the ocean?
Oh, we are. I think we're very sure not tipping in the ocean. That's part of the controls that certainly the Environment Agency would have on where that product goes to and how it gets used at the other end. And certainly whilst you see rivers of plastic on the television screens often, that is not rigid plastic that's there. It's mainly plastic bottles and bags and such like. Rigid plastic does have a value, like any commodity, and that value depends on what they can do with it. And they do crush it down and recycle it for other uses. And certainly China has been good at doing that, but it's had a bit too much of it in recent years
in terms
of the supply, and therefore they have put controls in place to limit the amount they're taking from not only the UK, I might add.
Yes, of course.
And let me also add, if I can, that it's not just Hertfordshire's got a problem with rigid plastic disposal. It's all the country does as well, because there aren't many facilities in the UK that can take rigid plastics and do something with it, which makes it recyclable and reusable.
So you said that there aren't many facilities within the UK. Are you still hopeful that some destination within the UK will be found for the plastics that are currently waiting for somewhere to go?
Certainly, that's what we're pushing Pearson's to do through Amy. We are saying that our preferred option by far is dispose of it in the UK and have somebody who can use it appropriately in the UK. Because paying the shipping cost to get it across, which is what Pearson's cost, not ours, but certainly shipping across the ocean to us is not a good idea. We think it's better if we can reuse it in some way in the UK, and that applies to all the waste that's generated in Hertfordshire.
Right.
We still continue to want to, if you like, eat our own waste, and including that would be plastic, not in Hertfordshire, I don't think, but certainly rigid plastic, but certainly in the UK.
Okay.
That's by far and away our preferred option. And it's Pearson's preferred option because travel costs.
Okay. So if people hang on to their hard plastic, you're hopeful that that service will be resumed fairly soon?
Not only hopeful, I think I'm quite confident that within weeks rather than months, Pearson's would have solved their problem and be able to take rigid plastics again at the recycling centres.
Okay.
And not have to put it into residual waste, which, as you can imagine, to us is totally unacceptable.
Yes, indeed.
the Burghers of Norwich and Albans, but also all of Hertfordshire, go out their way to take these things along to the recycling centres to make sure they're recycled. And we want that to happen. By far away, I prefer that.
So just whilst I've got you here, listeners were dismayed on Monday when they're talking about taking recycling and being disappointed when they arrived at the household waste recycling site at Ronson's Way here in St. Albans with their green waste and their wood to recycle. And they found that there was a bit of chaos going on. Everything was just being put into the same container. Can you explain to us what was happening there?
Well, as I said, if we hadn't had a chance to empty the container for any reason, then they would have to put it into one. And certainly, sometimes we can mix and then sort after rather than sort up front. And it's not the preferred option, of course. It's best to have everything sorted up front. But so, it depends what happens to that container afterwards. For example, if it's garden waste goes to one place which can be a certain type of recycling facility, and whereas wood waste would go somewhere else for a different type. There are some recycling centres that will take both as mixed. As you know, for example, you put your tree branches, wood, in with your grass cuttings. So they could mix those ones together. But the problem is, if in doubt, of course, it has to go into the non-recyclable and then end up either as energy for waste facility or, worst-case scenario, at landfill. But bear in mind that the amount of... We produce over 530,000 tonnes, Hertfordshire does, of waste every year. And you know, 10% of that, less than 10% of that, goes to landfill. The vast, vast majority is either reused, recycled, or goes to an energy for waste facilities.
That's great to know. Councillor Hone, thank you very much indeed for coming and explaining
that. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to put the position clear to the residents of not only, say, St Albans, but the residents of Hertfordshire.
That's OK. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Councillor Terry Hone, the Cabinet Member for Community Protection and Waste Management. Now, do follow me on Twitter at RV_environment, on Facebook too. And do remember that you can find the podcast of this programme on the Radio Verulam website. I'll be back at 7 o'clock next Wednesday, inspired by the royal wedding. We'll find out about gorgeous seasonal organic flowers local to here. Until then, thank you for listening.